Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio TV personality. Dedicated to empowering others through her mental skills, she also features authors and experts from all over the world to share their knowledge and experience with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna and her guests. Here's Donna.
Hi, and welcome to an hour of mind power. This is Donna Sebo. I'm so delighted you're able to join me today. I know all of you are so busy getting ready for the holidays. And, gee, are you like me when you bake your cookies, you're going to take a sample of this, a sample of that, and then after a few days you think, I wonder why my waistline feels a little bit bigger than it did before. My pants are getting a little snugger. And you're starting to panic and you gee whiz, should I go on a diet for Christmas? What should I do? Well, I've got news for you. We've got a wonderful guest today. Her name is Jane Bernard. We're going to be talking about food, which fits in right with the holiday season, wouldn't you agree? But we're going to be talking about it from a different perspective that I think you're going to find very, very interesting. And if you're like me and there's always been that battle of the, what do I want to say, the bulge? Okay. Well, Jane has got a book she's put out called Am I Really Hungry? The Sixth Sense Diet. Intuitive eating. Jane, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Donna. I'm thrilled to be here.
Well, I really thought that this was such an interesting perspective. Sixth sense diet. And I thought, what would the people say to something like this that they say, oh, I'm just addicted to this or I'm addicted to that when it comes to food? And I know of one person that says that they have absolutely no sense of when their stomach is full, and so they just overeat like you wouldn't believe. I mean, we get all kinds of statements from people. How is it that this was something that became significant to you, and you decided you were going to investigate and actually work with this intuitive eating perspective?
Well, the reason why it became apparent to me is twofold. First, this is my second book. I actually have another book that's about intuition called Fine Tuning, which is a very simple book about how you can use your five senses to realize you have a sixth, which is your intuition. And I was on the Montel Williams show and many, many radio shows internationally, and people kept saying, how can I use my intuition to lose weight? And a publisher asked me to write the book. So what I did was I interviewed dieters to see, you know, what was going on with them. And I also interviewed people who didn't diet but were their healthy weight, people I call intuitive eaters, to see what tricks they had that kept them slim. And what I learned was also I learned about diets. And what I learned was that when you are on a diet, you are never ever asked to recognize if you're hungry. I had to read a bunch of diet books. Actually, I read like 250 of them to write the proposal for this publisher.
Holy
and not
Joseph.
One of them. Yeah, I lived on the floor of Barnes & Noble, and I just sat there and read every diet book I can get my hands on. Not one of them said to people, this is how to recognize if you're hungry so you know when to eat. So I realized that people who diet were cut off from the neck down because they were never connecting with their bodies to know if they were hungry, which is why your friend you mentioned has that problem. And another thing that diet books did that blew my mind is they said to people, you must eat this and you can't eat that and you have to do this a certain way. And I was thinking, wow, that's so counterintuitive because, in fact, we can't really know at lunchtime what our body's going to be hungry for at dinner time. And diet books were written from an incredibly self-demeaning perspective. Not one of them assumed people liked their bodies, so they were negative. And the other thing is they never addressed is how do you know when you're satisfied? So what I did was I wrote this book. It's based on how to use the tips and tricks and techniques that intuitive eaters use to be in touch with their body and in sync with their priorities and personal boundaries around food and eating, with the emotional hot buttons that we all have as a result of growing up with what I call 20th century diet dogma.
I really think a lot of what you're saying makes sense, and I'll give you some points. I know that they've done studies with children, and they have put everything kids could possibly want. Candy, carrots, celery, you name it. They put everything out on the table.
Right.
And the kids, nobody told them what to take. And they might go, ooh, goody, candy. And they might chomp down on that a little bit. But then after a while, they didn't bother it at all. And they would start going towards vegetables or cheese and crackers or something like that. When they didn't have anybody telling them what to eat, they would just eat a little bit, and they'd go away. And I thought, you know what? That is so significant, because little ones, they don't have big tummies anyway, and it just doesn't take much to feed them. And usually if children just have a little bit of something they can put in their, you know, they like finger foods, and they chomp, and they'll have a little bit of this, and then they go back, and then maybe they'll have a nut, or maybe they'll have a piece of bread with a little bit of butter on it, or they do something, but they're always munching. They're just, they're not, I don't want to call them grazers, but...
Well, they're not always munching. If the food is available, they'll be munching. But the thing about children that's really significant is that children are very naturally tuned into their intuition. As a matter of fact, every living creature except us eats intuitively, and we're the only ones who diet, and we're the only ones who are overweight, which sort of says in reverse that diets make you fat.
And that has come true more and more in research.
Yes. Well, 95% of people who diet gain back more weight than they lost. And there's three myths that I can bust. One, two, three. One is calories. People obsess about calories and eating, but research has shown that all calories are not created equal. So you could have a calorie of from one food and a calorie from another food, but it could burn differently in your body. And in fact, our bodies are all unique, like our hunger is unique. So the way your body digests a delicious piece of lasagna may be totally different than the way my body does. So eating is personal, and what you eat, if you do listen to your intuition, you will eat exactly what you need, because eating is physical. Because of the fact that we have the diet consciousness, and we also have the media manipulation on television with all the diet meat advertisements, and also all of the unfortunate emphasis on superficial beauty, or what we're calling beauty, people have misplaced their hunger for emotional hunger and emotional satisfaction. But since eating is physical, when you use your five senses to connect with your body, then you start to recognize what you're hungry for. And kids are very tuned into their senses, and everyone has that little kid inside of them who can reconnect with their senses to know what they really want to eat.
I think that that is so true. And it's a interesting thing if we take the chance to observe. I think one of the fascinating perspectives that I observed personally is when I was on a cruise, and there was this amazing array of food. And anybody who's ever been on a cruise, one of the things that they'll talk about is they didn't believe that there would be so many different types of food that they could have. But I found that there were specific things that I wanted. Nobody was telling me what to eat, not to eat. And I just had a blast. I really did. And I didn't gain any weight.
And
most people come back and they've got 10, 15, 20 pounds, and because they're just going bonkers over a lot of stuff. But what I loved was the fact I could choose anything I wanted. And with
and
the
you
activities
can do that
we
every,
did. And,
every,
yeah. And that's the thing. And there have been times I've looked at a menu and said, I don't see anything here that I want.
Yeah,
and,
well, that's using prudence, isn't it? That's using, see, you don't have a diet mentality, but I coach people to help them be intuitive eaters. And one of the things that I learned was that people who are accustomed to dieting have a very hard time realizing that they have a choice. Because when you diet, diets take emotional control. Diet, when you read any diet book, basically the book says you either, it's either my way or the highway. If you don't eat this, you're a fat pig. And the language is like that. So that people feel badly about themselves on diets, and they feel like they feel such a constriction of their choices. They don't know prudence. But also another reason that people gain weight on cruises is because, again, back to the diet mentality, when we're told things are forbidden, then we want to have them. It's human nature. And you knew that you had choices and that you were in control of your choices, and that's why you didn't gain weight, but you ate what your body wanted.
And I ate chocolate, too, which was terrific. And I think Yes, but I think that that's something that a lot of people really, really should get back in touch with. I think of what I grew up with the Italian background that I had, that there was really a joy with food. It was a time to visit with people, and I was, my friend and I were discussing this. We both loved to cook, and we were talking about memories that we had of walking into homes that the first thing that you smelled, the food, and it was like it was an embrace. It was
like a time capsule.
Yes, and so that is something to this day that's significant to me. I think when you walk into someone's home and there's the smell of fresh bread or cookies or, you know, just lasagna cooking, and you just sit down and you have the fellowship of food and conversation, maybe a little bit of wine if you like that. It's just such a joy, and I think many times we've taken that out of the equation. Would you agree?
Well, I would, and that's not intuitive, because diets take that out of the equation. But it's intuitive to eat for pleasure. And if you're not enjoying, and I always tell people, if you're not enjoying whatever you're eating, stop immediately. And the difference between us and animals is, for us, eating is a prelude to other physical pleasures and even other emotional pleasures. And eating is supposed to be a time of socializing and bonding for people, as opposed to animals that just eat to live and eat on the run. And that's why it's so important to share the pleasures of eating. And also, when you do that, you eat less. For example, if you have... if I had a client who said, well, I don't know what I'm going to do. I can't keep, you know, I don't know what I'm going to do. I'm going to this great Italian restaurant. It's a business lunch, and they have the best bread, and then they have the greatest food, and everyone's going to order three courses. I said, this is what you do. When you get there and they put the bread on the table and you take a bite, talk about how good it is, and get everyone to talk about how it tastes and how much they like it. What will happen is people will eat less bread because they'll even notice that they're putting it in their mouths. They'll share the pleasure, and you can take control of how much you eat by enjoying what you eat.
In your book, you go into a great deal of detail, but you have one of your chapters addressing hunger, and you have three questions at the beginning of that chapter. What is it? How can one recognize it? And what does it mean? This is something that I think a lot of people have become unaware of. So let's talk about this chapter on hunger. Because when you're hungry, your stomach's growling, your body's letting you know maybe your blood sugar's really dropping, your energy is low, you need something. Let's talk about this.
Well, that's really good. What you were just describing was physical hunger. But what most people
don't know the difference of is the difference between physical hunger and emotional hunger. So it's, again, it's part of conditioning. There are physical symptoms of hunger, and you're right, it's pangs in your stomach. I'm still here.
Okay.
And even if you're physically hungry, sometimes you have a lack of concentration or a headache or a short temper or fatigue. But in fact, many times people eat out of boredom, loneliness, and frustration. And these are emotional hungers. And when we are, when you think you're hungry, the important thing is to check in with your body. And there's a three-minute rule. And the three-minute rule is if you're really hungry and you check in with your body for 3 minutes, do something else. Divert yourself because you may be hungry for conversation. You may be hungry for mental stimulation. You may be hungry for just stretch. You may be hungry, think you're hungry, but need other kinds of stimulation. If after 3 minutes you still feel hungry for food, then you are hungry. But generally, if you think you're really hungry, but it's a habit to grab, you know, some ice cream when you're lonesome, or it's a habit to just open up the refrigerator door when you're bored, if you can do something else for 3 minutes, you will be, you'll realize that you are not hungry.
Mm-hmm. I think that's a very good approach to take. It's really difficult, I think, if you have been involved in a diet mentality.
Yes.
For
mm-hmm.
a long period of time. I know. Mm-hmm. I was put on a diet when I was 5 years old by my mother, which was ridiculous, but that was her state of mind. I mean, mm-hmm. I see people that have little ones and they're growing. I think of a girlfriend of mine who at the time was a vegetarian, and her little boy looked like a little Buddha. Well, my goodness, now he's over 6 foot in height. You know, he had to sort of grow into who he was. And mm-hmm. he wasn't eating too much food. It's just the way he looked for a while. He was a healthy baby.
Yes, a lot of kids grow like accordions.
Yes.
They get, you know, they get fat and then they stretch out.
mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's the most, it's most unfortunate because food is love.
Mm-hmm.
And giving nourishment is love. And instead, and in Am I Really Hungry, what I teach people how to do is what intuitive eaters do, is they have certain tools that keep them connected with their intuition so they can make decisions that guide them to eat in a way that's good for their bodies. And that's what you can teach your children. You can teach your children how to stay connected with those little kids you were talking about who didn't eat the foods that weren't nourishing. Because intrinsically, kids want to be healthy. They want the best quality of life, and they want to do the right thing. And it's up to us as adults, instead of giving guidance by restricting them, which is the 20th century way of dieting, which is like so boring and so stressful and doesn't work, as we know, enable them to be like you are, Donna, to know that they can make choices and they can make healthy choices that feel good to their bodies.
Well, I think that's so very important. Now, here we are in the holidays. We have mm-hmm. so much going on. And no matter where you go, if you're going into a home where someone's a good cook, I can guarantee you, you're going to have wonderful stuff there that is absolutely deliciously delectable.
Absolutely.
And that really should be enjoyed. That is something where people should really enjoy the food. And I can remember years ago going to an event and just saying, oh, I can't do that. I can't have that. I can't have this. I can't have the other.
The diet
mentality. Yeah, the diet mentality. And it makes you bananas. You just get so miserable.
Right. And the thing you can do, the thing intuitive eaters do when they walk into a party, that's why my book is called Am I Really Hungry? They always ask themselves, am I really hungry? What am I really hungry for? Now, if I walked into a party and I saw that, you know, they were at least 10 things I was really hungry for because it was a banquet. The thing I would do as an intuitive eater is I would say, well, I've got to taste them because I love them and they give me pleasure. And instead of taking a serving of each thing, take a bite-sized piece of each thing, because this is an option. We always have a choice. And if you really taste your food, that's when you get the pleasure out of it. And one of the things at parties, which I'm sure you've noticed, like, you know, if you eat a piece of cake, for example, if you take, if you really taste it, first of all, that's eating intuitively. It slows down your eating, and it enhances your digestive process because it gives your brain time to work with your digestive system that food is coming, and you have pleasure. And when you experience pleasure, your body relaxes. But what also happens is if you taste the second bite of that piece of cake, it's not going to be necessarily be quite as good. And you're going to realize that you just wanted a taste. And the important thing to do at these holiday parties is go with the idea of having fun, but realize it's not about the food. It's really about people and mixing together, and that the food is just a delicious bonus that you are lucky enough to have because you're not starving in our world where so many people are hungry.
Yes,
and look at the food as a gift and think about what you're really hungry for, and if you love all those smells, then treat yourself with respect. Use dignity. Now, dignity is actually something we feel physically. It comes from our heart, and that's why dignity is a connection with your intuition, because intuition is physical, and the tools that connect us with it are also physical. So use dignity and say, I'm going to taste some lasagna. I'm going to taste some macaroni and cheese, but you know what? I'm going to notice if I'm filled up. I'm just going to have a little taste because I can't resist it. But don't have more than that, because actually you want to save room for dessert. It's a given. And that's another thing intuitive eaters use, is a tool called foresight. Foresight is basically looking both ways before you cross the street. But if you're talking about eating, foresight is saying to yourself before you eat something, how will I feel about myself in an hour if I eat this whole thing now? And that'll give you a perspective, and you'll say, you know what, I'll be pissed at myself, or I'll have gas, or I won't really have room for something else. So eat less. Eat less and talk more, and use the party to get the kind of food you get from laughter. Use the party to get the kind of food you get from eye contact. Use the party to feed yourself the love that you can feel from people who are your family. And you'll find that you're very satisfied.
You bring out various stories of different people you've interviewed and interacted with, worked with. There's a cousin of yours by the name of Linda that has gone through a lot of yo-yo dieting. Tell us a little bit about her and how she was able to snap out of the dieter's mentality.
Well, it wasn't overnight, but it has been a phenomenal thing. And one of the amazing benefits for Linda, and then I'll tell you a great story about the turkey sandwich story, which I always like to tell, is that she had this diet mentality for over 20 years. And I mean, she was obsessed. She measured and weighed everything. She wrote down every single thing that she ate. I mean, she was really dedicated and frustrated because, of course, she had yo-yoed. And part of the thing that happened as a result of having a diet mentality is every time she ate, she was obsessed with portion control, size, calories, et cetera, et cetera. And this impacted her marriage. Not intentionally, but what would happen is she would bring stress to the dinner table. Now, she wasn't aware of it, and her husband wasn't. But people who diet because they're so stressed about food, they resent when somebody else can eat what they supposedly can't, and it creates all kinds of negativity. So what has happened to her now that she tastes her food and she's really into enjoying every bite is she shares the pleasure with her husband, and their whole relationship has relaxed. So that is one of the surprise benefits of learning to eat intuitively, is that it impacts every relationship in your life. But a diet story, which is my favorite, one of my favorites from her, is when she was still like compulsive about everything. She said she was I talked to her on a Saturday. She said, "I'm having lunch with my friend on Monday at a certain restaurant that has bad things on the menu." Bad is her word, but I'm going to have a turkey sandwich. I've already decided, because that's something that's good for my diet. I said, "Okay." So I talked to her on Tuesday. She had had the lunch on Monday, and I said, "Lynn, how was your lunch?" "Oh, I was bad." I said, "What happened?" She said, "When I got home, I opened the refrigerator and ate a half a gallon of ice cream, and then I just couldn't stop." I said, "Well, why?" She said, "I just don't know." I said, "Well, how was your turkey sandwich?" And there was dead silence on the phone. And she said, "You know what? I don't remember eating it." And I said, "You know, I'm not really surprised, because you started eating it on Saturday, so it was 3 days old by the time you got to the restaurant on Monday, and you were probably sick of it." So the point of that story is that she could have gone to the restaurant on Monday, spontaneously decided, "You know, for what I feel like, what my body wants today, I'm going to have a turkey sandwich." It would have been fresh. She would have ordered it, because of course she could control what she orders, just like you could control yourself on that cruise ship, and enjoyed it. And anyway, that was a real turning point for her, was realizing that she hadn't even tasted the sandwich.
Well, it's really amazing what we human beings do. And I think in our very busy, active lifestyle, it is so easy, and I can relate to that story, because I can relate to some of the things that you've said about emotional eating. You know, sometimes you get to be in a hurry, and I'm sure some of my listeners have done the same thing, and you go and maybe you've put something out, and you've eaten it, and you have absolutely no memory of even tasting what you've eaten. And you go, "Do you mean I ate all that? You've got to be kidding. I couldn't have eaten that." And it's really quite interesting. And I think we get so busy and we want things so fast, and that's where we have gotten into supersizing everything. But
yes,
we just really aren't enjoying our food as much.
No, but also, I tell you something, Donna. You know, the diets were really started in 1963 when Jean Nidich invented Weight Watchers in her kitchen. And that was 50 years ago. And life was different then. It was a different pace. Things mm-hmm. were predictable. You know, when you went to the supermarket, whatever you bought didn't have chemicals in it. You didn't have to think about kinds of things we have to think about all the time now. So if you have the diet mentality, because you are following or have been a yo-yo dieter for a long time, that's why you would not know what you ate, because diets are not geared to the 21st century, but eating intuitively is. And using the tools in Am I Really Hungry keeps you in touch with your body, your heart, and your mind by keeping you clear about your priorities, since it's our sixth sense. And intuition is physical, just like seeing and hearing. Like right now, we can hear each other's voices, but we're not thinking, "Oh, I'm using my ears, I'm hearing." Of course mm-hmm. not. We do it automatically. Well, we use our intuition automatically the exact way that we use our other senses. And when the thing about it, you can't learn about intuition by reading about it. It's not intellectual, which is great because that means you don't have to remember anything about it either, just like you don't have to remember to use your ears when you're hearing my voice. But the way to learn to use your intuition, eating and also in every other part of your life, is by learning to use it when you eat, because there are so many tools that intuitive eaters use that once you use them, it reconnects you with that kid in you who was automatically intuitive, and you start to use your intuition to make choices in your best interest in other areas of your life.
Jane, it has been a delight having you as a guest today. Jane Bernard's book is Am I Really Hungry? Six Sense Diet, Intuitive Eating. It's really a much different approach, and you have to be awake to use it. And you can go to her website, amireallyhungry.com, and you can find out more information about it. Jane, it's been a delight having you as a guest, and thank you for coming on during a time of the year when most people are going to be chowing down and they can enjoy their food from a whole different perspective.
Thank you, Donna, and I wish you a wonderful, healthy, happy new year.
Thank you, Jane. The same to you. This is Donna Sebo. We're taking a break. We're going to be back in just a moment. Don't go away.
Have you ever had a friend tell you about a product they really believed in? Hi, this is Donna Sebo. Toprosin is a homeopathic cream that is just fabulous. I use it and my friends use it for relief of painful discomfort such as aching muscles and sore feet. Odorless, non-greasy, it is a product that belongs in everyone's medicine cabinet and first aid kit. Check out www.toprosin.com, that's T-O-P-R-I-C-I-N, and find out more information. You can order Toprosin online or call 800-959-1007, that's 800-959-1007. Be sure to give them the code DS30 and you'll receive a 30% discount. Toprosin, non-toxic, safe for children too. This is a product that really works. Try it. I think you'll like it.
Do you have a group, organization, or club that would like to have an interesting and dynamic speaker? Then you're going to want to have Donna speak to your group. She motivates audiences towards personal empowerment, giving them tools for their personal and professional success. If you would like Donna Sebo to bring a presentation to your next event, call Delphi International at 253-582-5604. That's 253-582-5604.
Hi, this is Donna. Welcome back. Telephone lines are open. Give me a buzz if you'd like for me to light up your life. Let's say about 2012. Oh, gee, we're so close to it. Can you believe it? Give me a call at 888-627-6008. That's 888-627-6008. Now, remember, all I need from you is your first name or your initial. And then after that, you're welcome to ask, after I give you information, you're welcome to ask me a question about anything that you like. Well, I want to let you know that we are going to be having a wonderful lineup of guests this week. We're going to be talking with J.R. Holden. His book is titled Blessed Footsteps. Now, this is a fascinating guy. He is the first Black African American to have both Russian and American citizenship. He's a basketball champion. His book is amazing, and I just think it's fabulous. We're going to have him on the air, so we are going to be talking about him tomorrow, and then on Wednesday we'll be talking with Philip Copens about the ancient alien question. Yes, yes, yes. And then how to survive your financial crisis. Vivian Gaspar is going to be my guest. And of course, we're going to be having the traditional Christmas special here on the Donna Sebo Show on Friday. And I, just like the rest of you, will be preparing for a huge event because Christmas is coming up over the weekend. And then on Monday, we are going to be having another Best of Donna. It's going to be about feng shui. So we've got a dynamic lineup. I hope that you will be able to join us. It's going to be fun, and if you're baking in the kitchen or whatever, just turn your computer volume on high and do whatever you need to do and listen to the wonderful guests that we have here on the Donna Sebo Show. Again, give me a buzz if you'd like to chat, 888-627-6008. I want to thank Cindy McGonigal, Portland, Oregon. We had a phenomenally successful event in Portland, and we will be doing another one. We don't know exactly when, but it was an absolute delight meeting all of the people that came out and attended the event. And it was just such a good job on the part of Cindy. She coordinated everything, put it all together, and it was an absolute joy. So I want to say thank you to all the people that made it possible. And there was Debbie and Nicola and so many other people that made it just absolutely magical. So thank you very, very much. Okay, I wanted to share a Christmas poem with you by Jan Ursuling. And it reads, "The joy that lingers, the peace that warms, the love and the laughter in hearts and homes. Christmas is here." And, oh my goodness, it is so much fun. Yesterday, my husband performed. He was a soloist in an event put on by a group of Ukrainian people, and the choir was wonderful, and there were these phenomenal professional singers playing instruments I'd never seen before, and we were regaled with all of this unique Ukrainian music. And I thought to myself, music really is a universal language, and it's such a wonderful experience to step into the environments of different cultures to see how they celebrate their holidays. And I learned that in the Ukraine, which is Kiev in the minds of some, it's just a marvelous, marvelous place. It's beautiful in the Ukraine, that they celebrate Christmas on January the 7th. So they're actually going to have another Christmas holiday celebration, and the choir is going to be performing along with these other people. And it's just quite an education. It's so much fun to look about and to investigate different environments that bring art and music to a much different level than maybe what you have experienced. So it was just absolutely delight. It was a great group of people. Okay, I want to share with you, I don't know about you, but if the schedule gets a little hectic, do you have that feeling that you think things are catching up with you? I think soups are one of the best things to serve, especially when the temps are cold and fresh bread made. There's nothing better than a good bowl of soup. And, of course, I have what I call Donna's whatever soup, and it's whatever's in the refrigerator goes into the soup, and it's amazing how good it turns out. Sometimes you have a little bit of spaghetti sauce left over, or you have sausage, or you have chicken, or you have a whole bunch of vegetables. All goes in the pot. And I learned that years ago. It's a great way to clean out the refrigerator, but it's also a way of utilizing and creating a very, very healthy meal. And a salad can go with it. And like I said, freshly baked bread, if you've got a special recipe for cornbread. Oh, just super. Well, I came across this recipe and I thought, gee, I can smell this just reading it. It's so easy. It was put together by Robin Miller, and it's made with cheddar, bacon, and scallions, and risotto. And risotto is a very, very small pasta. And this is what she had in her recipe. And it's not a whole bunch of ingredients, but the flavors are just amazing. And if you like more of a bite with a cheese, using a sharp cheddar is very good. But I'd also say you might want to try different cheeses. Sometimes a softer cheese mixed in might give you a whole different texture with the soup. But let me give you the recipe as she made it. You need a tablespoon of olive oil. You need a cup of arborio. It's like a short grain rice. You need about 6 ounces. And then you need about 4 cups of chicken broth. And you want to maybe, sometimes you can get the chicken broth that has roasted garlic in it. Or if you want to roast your own garlic and toss it in, you can do that too. And you need a cup of shredded cheddar cheese, whatever is your preference, mild or sharp. You're going to need 6 slices of bacon. And you cook your bacon first so that it's nice and crisp, and you then let it drain, and then you crumble it up. And a quarter of a cup of chopped scallions. You want to use both the white and the green parts. And, of course, salt and pepper to taste. Now, this is how simple it is. Really quick. You could also do this, if you wanted to, in a crock pot, which I swear by crock pots. Anyway, you take your oil, you heat it up, and you put it, this is going to go in a medium pot. You want medium heat underneath. You put your arborio, your rice, in for 2 minutes, and it's going to turn translucent. You stir it frequently. Then you add a half a cup of your broth. The liquid will be absorbed very quickly, and you stir while you're doing it. Continue to add the broth, and the liquid will continue to be absorbed by risotto. And you add a half a cup to a cup at a time, and it just keeps going and going and going. And then, after you've added all of your liquid, then you add your cheese. You stir it till it's melted. You stir in your bacon and your scallions. You got it. That's how simple it is. Yum. Good stuff. I would say, if you want something a little spicy, have some Tabasco maybe on the table, or add some red pepper flakes to it. I mean, this simple recipe really can go a long way. It is just absolutely amazing, and it's very, very adaptable. So just have fun with it. I agree with a guest that we had today. We need to know that food is pleasurable. And so many times through my life, because I very much have had the dieting mentality, and I think finally I've grown up and out of it, but it's so easy to go back into it. Oh, I got to do this. I can't do that. I have to have this. I can't have that. And when we really pay attention to what our bodies want, we will do better things with ourselves and with what we eat. And I was with someone over this past weekend on the business trip, and she found that she was not necessarily allergic to wheat, but she found that she started eliminating wheat from her diet. And she found that she was curious about gluten-free, and she just tested with her body. How did she feel after she ate things? And she found that for herself, she eliminated wheat. She only now has gluten-free and yeast-free products. She said, I just feel wonderful. So she did this all on her own. You know, our guest is talking about becoming aware of intuitive eating, and this individual did it all on her own. She figured this out. And I think if we can take the time with ourselves to do exactly that, we're not going to have a problem. We won't have a problem with weight. And if we decide we're going to have that yummy, double, triple, quadruple, decadent chocolate, whatever, it's okay. We're going to be able to enjoy it, and we're going to really have a sense of pleasure with it. I know there have been times in my own life where I have eaten and I really haven't liked what I've put in my mouth. It just didn't taste good, but I would eat it anyway. How many of us were raised with, you got to clean everything off your plate? I mean, I've talked with men who have been in the military that were told by their staff sergeants, you don't leave anything on your plate. Maybe your mom did, your dad did, maybe came up through real difficult times. If you've known what hunger is big time, you don't forget that. And it's fascinating if you have animals, and I'll talk about Scotties because we've had Scottish Terriers. Some of the terriers that we've adopted through the years that were severely deprived of food, they were foodaholics. I mean, they would literally just wolf the food down without even tasting it, and they wanted more and more and more. Well, when they learned that they were going to have food, that food was going to be available for them, they stopped doing it. It might have taken them a couple of years to get to that point, but we've had more than one dog that that's occurred with. The dogs that we got from the time that they were puppies and they had their food, and my goodness, our little Scotty Victor, he's a great example. He eats. If he has something in front of him he doesn't like, he just looks at it. It's like, excuse me, why did you give this to me? I don't want it. And he won't eat it. He doesn't want to complain. He just doesn't eat it. And when he's hungry and if he likes what's in front of him, then he eats it. It's a fascinating phenomenon, and when he's full, he stops. How many of us have been guilty of eating and eating and eating until we feel like we're just going to be like one of those plastic balloons and burst? Well, we've all done it. I just think it's something that we can watch animals and observe them, and when they're full, when they're not hungry, they don't eat, unless they have been severely deprived. So lots of things we have to work through in life, but I think it is really paying attention to what we do, how we do it, and not doing it mindlessly. And boy, I can raise my hand. I've done a lot of mindless stuff in my life, and many times it's been with food. So I've just had to make it a point to pay attention. And am I perfect? Heavens, no. But it's something that I'm more relaxed about now, and I'm more at peace with. But if ever you've had a challenge with it, boy, I can share that understanding with you. And I think anytime we can empower ourselves and be more aware of who we are and what we are, the better it is. And to like ourselves, that's extremely important. Well, I was talking about terriers and dogs just a moment ago, but I wanted to share with you that there actually has been a record about an undercover kitten. Now, I'm not kidding. This is a kitten that ended up becoming a very significant part of the police, and actually the kitten was recognized by both the police and the fire department in Brooklyn. And it came about in 2006, and they said that this cat was a heroine, and it was a hero, not a heroine. It's Fred. That was the name of the cat. And this they call a crime-fighting kitten. He was given a special award for undercover work that helped them trap a bogus veterinarian. Just when you think you've heard of everything, well, somebody comes up with something that you hadn't heard of before. But it was because of this wonderful, wonderful cat named Fred that a phony was caught. This is Donna Sebo. We're taking a break. When we come back, I've got some wonderful stories to share with you and, well, maybe a little bit of this and a little bit of that. And if you want to chat with me, this is a good time to do it. Call me toll free at 888-627-6008. We're going to be right back.
Are you taking too many oral pain pills and concerned about the side effects? Are you having trouble getting to sleep at night because of the pain? Well, I'm Lou Paradise. I had the same problems you have, cured my pain, eliminated pain pills and their side effects by developing Toprasin, pain relief and healing cream. Toprasin relieves pain without the side effects. It doesn't burn, it doesn't smell, and it doesn't stain. But don't take my word for it. Doctors, pharmacists, and pain specialists are using and recommending Toprasin and ending the suffering for thousands of people just like you. We know you hurt. We want to help. We are so sure that Toprasin will work for you, we offer a money-back guarantee. So if you want the pain relief without the side effects, ask for Toprasin. Toprasin is available at Duane Reade, Quick Check Pharmacies, and Wegmans. Ask for Toprasin or call 1-800-959-1007 for a store near you. That's 1-800-959-1007. Toprasin, the last pain medicine you'll ever need, and you can sleep on that.
Are you concerned about nutrition? Do you work hard to eat right, try to feed yourself and your family nutritious food? Well, you'll want to know about glyconutrients. What are they? These are sugars that are present in nature. However, we're not getting them in our food anymore. Scientific study is proving that these sugars are necessary for all cellular and immune system function. Over 20,000 studies are conducted each year on glycoforms alone. These are the sugar protein structure that line each and every cell of the body. 4 out of the last 8 Nobel Prizes in physiology have been awarded for research in the area of cellular communication and how these sugars work in the body. This is Donna Sebo. Every day I bring to you information that will empower and light up your life. I would like to invite you to visit my website, DelphiInternational.com, and find out more about these glyconutrients. That's DelphiInternational.com. Go to my website, go to the left side of the screen, tap on the button that says glyconutrients. MIT's Technology Review, February 2003, states that glycomics is one of the 10 emerging technologies that will change the world. Education is the key to advancement of understanding and making our lives better. Visit my site, DelphiInternational.com. Go to the left side of the screen and tap on the button that says glyconutrients. I know it'll make a difference for you, as it has for me.
Hi, this is Donna. Welcome back. Give me a buzz if you'd like to chat, 888-627-6008. There's a woman by the name of Rosemary Tromer who wrote a wonderful story, and I thought I would share it with you in keeping with the season. It's her own personal story about Christmas. She said, except for birthdays, Christmas was the only time my family burned candles. I came to associate their light with pleasure, gifts, family, prayer, and incredible anticipation. The Egyptians are credited as the first to dip rushes into animal fat, enabling it to burn longer. The Romans first used wicks. Like the Egyptians, they made tallow candles, using them for evening travel and worship. These early candles were practical, making the warmth and light of fire portable. However, there's nothing romantic about tallow. It smokes profusely, smells putrid, and drips freely, all for a feeble glow. At least tallow was cheap. Not until the Middle Ages did people make candles from beeswax, the clear substance bees secrete when building honeycomb. It burns clean, smells pleasant, and doesn't drip much. But for centuries, it was so costly that only the churches used it. Imagine being alive then, living in a dark, non-electric world, stepping into a church filled with beeswax candlelight. Bees themselves were considered symbols of purity, and the candles from their wax was like the candles of my childhood, heralds of something important, wonderful, and mysterious. Though the candle is commonplace these days, it still presents us with an opportunity to marvel. Like Christmas itself, each candle is a promise. No matter how dark, how cold, how bitter the world may be, even the tiniest light makes a difference. That's by Rosemary Traumer, and she's from Telluride, Colorado. Lovely, lovely statement. I just thought that that was terrific. Anyway, I want to also share with you a spooky story. Well, it may not sound very Christmassy, but I think it's an intriguing one. Are you, like I am, fascinated with unique experiences, happenings that are not logical by any scientific evaluation? Well, this is a story that I think you might find quite interesting. It has to do with flight pilots. They're ghosts, actually. Now, this particular event occurred in 1972. Was during the month of December. There was a TriStar jetliner, in fact, it was Flight 401, flying from New York. It crashed into an alligator-infested Florida swamp. Now, to the best of their knowledge, the instruments on the aircraft were acting really weird. The captain was concerned that the nose gear had failed to lock. The second officer had climbed down to inspect the nose gear when the plane hit the water. Dampness prevented fire from breaking out. A lot of people managed to get out of the plane, but many of them died, including the pilots. However, there's another factor with this happening. The pilots kept showing up for work. That's right. The pilot, Bob Loft, and the navigator, Don Repo. People kept seeing them after the crash. More than 20 incidents had taken place, especially aboard crafts that were fitted with parts salvaged from this plane wreck. Both of these men were often recognized by people that were, well, old friends, or people who had seen their photographs. They had never met them. There was one occasion where a particular pilot that was working for the same airline as the deceased airman had was warned by an airline engineer sitting in the cockpit jump seat of a problem with wiring, which was a big fire risk. Now, this pilot assumed the man had done a pre-flight check. The pilot followed up and had the problem corrected. He went to thank the man who gave him the information, but the man had vanished. There was another case reported. A female passenger had expressed concern over the fact that there was a man in an airline uniform sitting next to her, but he wouldn't respond to her at all. This man vanished from her view, as well as other people that saw him. He just disappeared right in front of them. When they saw the photos of Don Repo, the navigator, they said, that's the guy that was on the plane. There was a flight attendant, Faye Merriweather, at another time, who saw Dan Repo's face looking at her from the galley oven. Later, she learned the oven had been salvaged from the flight he had crashed in. She called two of her co-workers, and all three of them heard Don Repo warn them, "Watch out for fire on this airplane." Later, they experienced engine trouble, and the final leg of its flight was canceled. Fascinating stories, huh? It's not an experience a lot of people want to talk about. It does happen, though. I know. Have you had some interesting experiences? I'd love to hear about them. Send me an email at donna@delphiinternational.com. We're out of time. I'm so delighted we've been able to share this day together, and I look forward to talking with you tomorrow. And remember, always, you're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. This is a wonderful season. If you have a love of cooking, enjoy it. Project love into all of the food that you prepare, because believe me, it will be enjoyed and felt by the people who share it and who will praise you on how, for some reason, it just seems to taste so good. They just wish they could do it themselves. And you'll be getting all the credit because, hey, you've got that magic touch. This is Donna Sebo. We'll be talking with you here on bbsradio.com, same time, same place, right here on The Donna Sebo Show. Talk to you then. Bye for now.
You have been listening to The Donna Sebo Show. If you would like a copy of today's broadcast, send $10 to The Donna Sebo Show, P.O. Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497-0272. Be sure to put the date of the broadcast in your request. If you are not able to be a part of today's program, join Donna and her guests Monday through Friday, and she will be here to take your calls. Thank you for listening and being part of our program. Have a wonderful day.